Welcome to the Dialogue by Wirepoints, connecting the dots between our economy, government, and people. And now your hosts, Ted Dabrowski and Mark Glennon.
Hello again, this is Ted Dabrowski from Wirepoints, and I'm joined by my partner, Mark Glennon. And today we're going to do a little bit of catch-up on two or three big issues in Illinois that matter a lot to people. And that first one is it sounds kind of boring sometimes, but it's the Unemployment Insurance Fund. And it has a lot to do with how during COVID and the lockdown, so many people lost their jobs, got unemployment payments, but it wiped out the money that Illinois had in its fund. So we'll talk a bit about that and all the implications, because there are many. The second thing we'll talk about is out-migration. The census just put out new data on county by county and city information on out-migration in Illinois and the whole country. And it's damning and scary. And the last subject of time, we'll talk about a piece that Mark wrote on the energy, let's call it inflation in Illinois, and the impacts it's having on lots of Illinoisans, in particular the lower income. So let's get started with the big one. The Senate and the House both approved taking a bunch of COVID aid money, $2.7 billion, and putting it towards the Unemployment Insurance Fund that's been dry, so dry that we actually owe the federal government $4.5 billion because they lent us money to make those unemployment insurance claims. And we have to pay that money back. And the question is, when should we have paid it back, with what money, and what does it mean if we can't pay it all back with COVID aid? So before we do that, Mark, why don't you talk a little bit, you've written about some of the fraud and all that's gone in the Unemployment Insurance Fund. So why don't you open up, just tell us about how this thing works.
Sure. The state has a separate account, as all states do, where they set aside money to cover potential claims by individuals for unemployment when they get laid off. And the Treasury sets some rules about how much you have to have on hand. They estimate what it should take to make the thing actuarially sound. And at the start of the pandemic, we had about $1 billion in our account. It's not clear whether that was really up to Treasury standards, but that's what we had. That $1 billion got entirely wiped out, and we had to go to the Treasury then to borrow money to cover all the unemployment claims. That was another $4.5 billion. It's not unusual in a downturn that states do that, but it usually gets repaid pretty quickly. And almost all states have done that. There's nine or so that still have outstanding balances on their loan. And it has to be repaid. It bears interest right now, that loan to the Treasury. Just the interest bill alone is now running at about $100 million per year. This wasn't The whole thing was entirely ignored in the budget, so you should get a laugh out of claims that we had a balanced budget last year going. So the fight is how to repay that loan and how to put the fund back into proper shape. The businesses want that covered by money, cash that the state still has on hand from all the federal help that was given to them. The alternative is that taxes have to be raised on business. Those are the two primary ways that trust funds get fixed if they go too low. Is you got to either raise taxes on the employers or reduce unemployment benefits. We don't want to reduce unemployment benefits, and businesses don't need any higher taxes in Illinois. So to accomplish a resolution of this, Pritzker just announced, and the legislature is passing, that it will take $2.7 billion from that cash it has on hand from the federal government and pay that towards that total hole that's in the unemployment trust fund. So we not only have the borrowed money, but we do have to restore the fund to a positive balance. We're not sure exactly what that total comes out to, probably a total of somewhere between $5 and $6 billion. That would get it back to where it was prior to the pandemic, and probably a higher amount that's actually required now by the Treasury. So the critics, Republicans, conservatives primarily, have been screaming about this in Springfield. They don't like the low contribution that is being made. They wanted the state to do what most prudent states have been doing, which is pay down these loans entirely and use their federal money if necessary to do so. The state hasn't done that. So Pritzker instead, according to critics, has been paying for goodies, new programs, all the things that you see, you know, including infrastructure programs, which, you know, Illinois has its own infrastructure bill, despite the fact of this huge inflow of federal infrastructure money that's coming in. So, Ted, the first thing that I have to get off of my chest is how Pritzker has distorted this. If there's anything that motivates here, it's when we hear politicians lie shamelessly about things. And Pritzker, I have to say, is the champion of how dare them challenge my fiscal responsibility. Here I am trying to pay down their debts, and they criticize this. Well, no, the concern that the critics have is they wanted to do more of it and that this didn't go far enough. They don't want more taxes raised on employers to cover this. Well, that's where it stands, Ted, and I'm sure you had the same reaction as I did to that statement by Pritzker.
Yeah, well, let me add some background for the people who haven't followed it closely, because most people won't follow this kind of issue closely. So there's a few things that have to be taken into account. Number one, I can understand why companies, businesses don't want to have more tax hikes. First of all, our unemployment in Illinois is far higher here than it is in the rest of the country. We are double the unemployment rate in Indiana. You know, if we had the same unemployment rate as Indiana today, we would have 160,000 more people working. So more taxes on businesses would be bad. Number two, we have to remember that Governor Pritzker imposed some of the harshest lockdowns in the country. So a lot of them don't feel responsible for the unemployment claims that came through. It was Pritzker that nobody could convince to lay off of some of the lockdowns. He still manages the state with an executive order. So there's a lot of unhappiness with that part as well. The other big part is that, you know, the state got billions of dollars in all kinds of ways. We've talked about this on the podcast. A total of $180 billion has come into Illinois, into the private sector and public sectors. And what it's done, it's created a massive windfall of revenues, tax revenues for the state, income tax revenues, sales tax revenues, capital gains tax revenues. So when you take all that windfall of billions that have come in, plus the billions that the state got directly, $8.1 billion in the ARPA, there was more than enough to pay down this unemployment insurance debt, this $4.5 billion. And so that's why people are ticked off. It's like the state dithered. It didn't do anything. They could have done this a year ago. And instead, they've spent the money on programs. You hear Governor Pritzker always coming out with a new, you know, campaign of where he's spending money. And again, all that money could have gone into the trust fund. So we're paying interest on that money that we owe to the government. If we don't fully pay it back, that means we're going to have to borrow money and put that debt on the backs of the businesses. They're going to pay higher taxes. And all that is bad. And higher taxes doesn't mean higher taxes. It means fewer jobs for Illinoisans, because, you know, the bigger the costs are for companies, the fewer people they're going to employ. So that's some of the background to that. And it's right that that, you know, people, businesses should be ticked off.
Ted, this is yet another example of government helping create the problem and then government making you pay to fix the very problem that they created. The particular economic problems, all the layoffs that we had here in Illinois, were caused by COVID itself, of course, but also by the extreme lockdown measures that Illinois had. And we were among the very last to remove those restrictions. The scientific consensus is becoming clear that that did not help suppress COVID. So we created that problem. Another problem with this unemployment trust fund is that a large part of it went out for fraud. We don't know exactly how much because the state has refused to provide an accounting on that. But all estimates are that, and it's not just Illinois, but nationally, it's in the hundreds of billions of dollars, probably several billion for Illinois. And so that was caused by mismanagement. I mean, on the one hand, you had valid claimants being driven crazy, trying to get their money, impossible to get it. Many of you listening probably went through that experience, but fraudsters apparently had an easy time. So this was government mismanaged that caused a large part of this problem. And now government is fouling up the solution to it. Same old, same old.
Yeah, we actually got a call today, somebody who read our newsletter and saw the critique we had of this. And he called us. He's a 70-year-old man. We're not going to share his name now because he says he's willing to go on record, but we don't know him and enough of what his story was. But he's 70 years old. He has an oxygen tank he has to carry around. He says that he's gotten a note from his doctor that he couldn't work. Long story, but basically he could not work, and he's been challenged. He's had to go to court to prove that he was worthy of receiving the unemployment insurance claims that he was asking for. He's been denied several times now, and he's so ticked off because he's heard about all the fraud that goes on. So here's an elderly man just trying to, and he sounded reasonable. Again, I don't know him, so I can't vouch, but I know it's the kind of stories we hear where people have tried, they tried to call to get help from the government. They struggled. And yet, as you bring up, the fraud numbers are in the, massive numbers, right? So that's a sad part. Let me add one more thing too, Mark, to your point about Pritzker and the celebration. We attacked this problem, gosh, I guess it's been a few months, I don't know, 3 or 4 months ago, and others were attacking the problem even earlier because nothing was being done. And, Governor Pritzker came out and celebrated his, I put in quotes, air quotes here, his balanced budget. But everybody knew that he did nothing about the $4.5 billion now we know part of that will become debt. He ignored it. And Andy Menar came out and attacked our attack of their problem. And he said they had a plan for this, but they never had a plan. They're only coming to pressure now because there are deadlines of them having to act in order to get this unemployment insurance fund repaid. And so, their plan is to take some of the COVID aid we have, but the rest is going to be on the backs of the companies and eventually on job losses.
And to add to the gall on this, 2 weeks ago, Governor Pritzker went in front of a House Oversight Committee, United States House of Representatives Oversight Committee, that's supposed to be in charge of seeing after proper use of these federal aid monies, those ARPA dollars that came to the state. And it was just a clown show. It was bragging about how Illinois put itself in a proper budget position, bragging about a surplus. He even claimed that we now have surpluses for years to come. Well, there's no basis for that. He hasn't put up his projection. The last projections that they had up show deficits in the coming years. And with the requirement of making up for this unemployment fund, it's a lot of money. I mean, there's still 2.3 at least trillion owed to the Treasury, another billion or two to restore the fund. It's just another piece in why these claims about balanced budgets are nonsense.
Yeah, just one clarification. John Klinger and I are, one of our colleagues here. We actually went into the trust fund solvency report, which is a report that has how much all the different states have in their insurance trust fund. And in January of 2020, so before this whole mess started, we had $1.9 billion of balances. So this problem's bigger, like you said. It's really like a $6.5 billion problem, of which Governor Pritzker and the legislature have just put in $2.7 billion from the COVID aid. So it's a $3 to $4 billion problem. That's a massive tax hike any way you look at it. And I think the bottom line for anybody listening, Governor Pritzker can try to celebrate and say that he's helping companies by putting in the $2.7 billion. That's just not, sadly, it's just not true. If you look at most states, they took their COVID aid and paid down their full balances. That's why there's only 9 states left who haven't paid back, and we're one of them, unsurprisingly. So if you hear that celebration, it's just not true.
Ted, let's talk about population losses. The Census Bureau has now started to provide some details on population losses and broke them out by county, which were released today. And you took a close look at this. Why don't you tell us what you found?
Yeah, again, unsurprising. If we come off of our previous discussion just now, it's people feel hoodwinked and whatever. Let me remind people of when the census originally came out with these 2021 numbers a few months ago. They announced that Illinois lost 113,000 people, almost 1% of its population in 2021. Of course, some of that can be COVID related. People left Chicago. We'll have to wait and see what the net result of it is. But again, we're the second largest loser in the country on a percentage basis when those numbers were announced. Almost 1% of our population. New York was the worst. And now, like you say, they've put out the county-based and city-based data. And, you know, you see the pain everywhere. When you lose 113,000 people, it's going to happen everywhere. And so what do we know from that? Well, Cook County was the third biggest loser in the country for population loss. And 81 of Illinois' 102 counties lost population. And the ones that did gain were teeny gains. Of course, some of the counties are small, so some of the losses are small. But overall, we lost 113,000 people. What's significant about this time around, usually when Cook County loses population, it's because Kendall and, you know, our collar counties win some of that population. Well, this time around, the collar counties on net lost population. So the collar counties lost, it's only 6,000, so it's not a huge number, but it's 0.2%. But the downstate counties lost 0.4%, and Cook County lost 1.7%. So 113,000 total, second worst in the country. It's bad news.
Ted, what struck me in these numbers, too, is that the concentration seemed to be more heavily this time in higher income areas as well. In the past, it was pretty evenly dispersed across the state. And immediately upon your article being published, Ted, I got an email from a very successful guy in venture capital that I've known and worked with, who flagged this for me and said, what we've seen for a long time is that the exodus of really high net worth players who provide a huge part of our income tax revenue has really accelerated recently, particularly during the pandemic. I mean, they've got two or three houses anyway, so it was no big deal for them to change residences during the pandemic and work from elsewhere. And apparently that's what we've been done. This is a part of anecdotal evidence, by the way, that I think has turned out to be accurate. We first started writing about this 6 or 7 years ago, before the Census Bureau started to show, or the IRS started to show, loss of population here. But we were pounding the table that we were seeing it and saw it to be true. It turned out to be true. It was validated in the census numbers that later came out. And it's worsening. Again, I see it now, and it is worsening in those high income sectors. I remember some interesting data came out just recently on taxes. Last year during the pandemic, 55% of America did not pay any income taxes. And that's true in Illinois too. I mean, the state taxes kind of track the federal taxes. So the burden is left to people with some means who pay it. And if they are fleeing in larger proportions now, it's only going to accelerate our problem.
Well, this is what's scary about a place like Illinois. It's got a very wealthy sector in Chicago and in the collar counties. All those people that work for big companies, all the successful companies. You got the financial sector. Very dangerous because, you know, and I think the Wall Street Journal had a very good article about it. But you saw that the strict COVID lockdowns, those that were more oppressive, let's call it, were the big losers, and those who were more open, you know, and there's some correlation between that and of course, southern states, let's say, or a Texas or a Florida or a Tennessee. And, you know, the big cities, they're big cities that won population. Chicago shrunk in this 2021 number, about 90,000 people. New York City, of course, shrunk even more. But there are some big cities that gained, you know, like places like Dallas and other, you know, southern cities. They found the population. And so when you think about COVID, when you think about those people who are mobile, you know, they just take their laptop and their iPhone and boom, they're working out of, you know, somewhere in Florida and doing the usual work, and they can catch a plane anywhere in the country. And that's our big risk right now, Mark, is that venture capital guy that called you and we wrote about a similar guy who's out west now. It's too easy now to work from anywhere. And get your work done and live a different life. And so watch out, Illinois, watch out, Chicago.
Yeah, Ted, and just so people know, these are actually 2021 numbers. These are not the same old census numbers that got a lot of attention at the end of the decade, the 10-year census numbers that came out last year. These are updated estimates broken down by county that just came out for 2021.
That's correct.
Ted, a big result of all that federal spending is inflation, which is absolutely killing the working class. You know, it's a nuisance to people with higher incomes, but you add a couple hundred bucks or $300 on somebody's budget in a month, and that's devastating for so many people, especially if it's at the gas tank. You know, for people that, let's say, independent contractors that drive a truck around, or people that have long commutes, they're not part of the laptop class, they can't work from home. This is a very regressive thing. Inflation in general is, and energy in particular. So let's talk a little bit about what Illinois has done to make this worse. One of the proud points of the Pritzker administration that they always brag about, and the legislature, particularly the progressives, brag about, is what's called CEJA that was passed last year. This is the big renewable energy bill that will attempt to shift our electricity production to 50% renewables by 2040 and 100% by 2050. So instead of letting consumers pick or utilities pick the cheapest sources of energy for energy production, electricity production, government is stepping in and telling, mandating where the purchases have to be. Well, you know, today we only have about 11% of our electricity production coming from renewables. It overwhelmingly comes from coal, nuclear, and natural gas. And, you know, that 50% target in 2050, some people say, well, actually, the, you know, CEJA ignored that. They count that as clean energy, and so there's some potential there. Well, but we've got a separate moratorium. There's a statutory moratorium, a prohibition on building new nuclear facilities of any kind. And all the nukes in Illinois are at the end of their life. They're scheduled to come out of service by 2050 anyway. So effectively, we have a mandate for an impossible switch to renewables. Ted, we're going to look like California not too long from now, which is to say fantastically high energy prices and very unreliable energy production with blackouts occurring regularly, unless this thing gets revisited. You know, I'm not against renewables, by the way. They have their place. Obviously, they can and should be part of the solution. But we got to be investing in those that are cost competitive. And in Illinois right now, they are not. We need to develop them to the point where they are the cheaper alternative. We had a pretty good system before, I think, where people, as you know, if you're a consumer, you voluntarily choose if you want to pay a little more for renewables. Businesses could do the same and claim that they are green and that they're net zero. But we've taken that away and made it a mandate. Ted, are you as worried about this as I am?
Well, I am. And I think, you know, you kind of get back to the overall discussion of whether it's COVID or pensions or inflation, all those things that government doesn't do a good job of. This is one of them. So, you know, just a few months ago when they were trying to talk about how they were going to, you know, of course, end coal in Illinois. I've struggled to find a real plan that the governor, we FOIA'd the governor for his plan of how you get to such ambitious goals of having that much renewables be part of the solution. And, you know, maybe upstate there's some plans of how to get there, but downstate there isn't. And so I'm concerned that in the same way that they think that they have, that they can do it, you know, they're not experts. They have no plan. These are again, Governor Pritzker and others, they're government bureaucrats who don't know what the market system will look like 5, 10, 15 years down the road. And I think all you need to do is look at a place like California that didn't plan well. You know, they don't have a good baseload production, and so they end up having a mess. And I think we run the big risk of doing that. unless there's some other more clever ways. And you mentioned nuclear, and that was a part of your piece the other day, was that there might be some ideas of these small nuclear facilities that could be used.
Well, let's talk about that, because I commend a Democrat, Representative Walker from the Arlington Heights area, who has proposed a bill now to end that moratorium on nuclear construction. And by the way, nuclear generates right now 58% of our energy production. So we're supposed to entirely get rid of that. And this is a very clean energy source, and extremely safe now, by the way. The days of Three Mile Island or Chernobyl are gone. They don't make reactors like that anymore. And Representative Walker's particular emphasis that he wants to see is development of what are called micro-nukes, micro-generators. They're very small nuclear power plants that can fit into a semi-trailer, and they can power a whole little area. They are thought to be extremely safe. They're still in development. They have to be proved up, but there's a lot going on worldwide. There's all kinds of information you can find online. And I think he's very rightly identified this as an area we ought to be exploring, and something even potentially that our universities, University of Illinois, could be focusing on. But we are just not going to be able to replace nuclear, 58% of our sources, coal, which is declining anyway for a lot of reasons, still 18% of our production, and natural gas, which is an abundant supply. Natural gas fires 14% of our electricity generators. So we're supposed to get rid of all those and replace them with windmills and solar panels. It's just not going to happen, and it's going to be very expensive in the meantime. Throwing away an advantage, by the way, a few decades ago, Illinois showed some wisdom. They put up a very competitive system that allowed the utilities and encouraged them to find the cheapest sources available. We have had cheap sources readily available, lower energy costs than much of the country. It was a source of an advantage for us, for workers, better even than Wisconsin, for example, and some of our other neighboring states. Well, that advantage is being thrown out the door. Ted, by the way, this is another political mistake being made by the left, by the Pritzker administration, by the progressives. They better start looking at the polls on this, because Americans overwhelmingly want to see more drilling for fossil fuels to try to bring down costs. The most recent one I showed showed 78% of Americans say that. And it cuts across party lines. Democrats, too, want to see that. They are angry about how the Biden administration and a number of states, not just Illinois, have set up this war on fossil fuels. Yeah, they're concerned about climate change, by the way, too. Most Americans think climate change is real. It's not a high priority for them, but they think it's real. They just wisely see that there's a need for some balance and some timing in this. Ted, do you get the sense that our politicians are wise to this? Or is there any room that they're going to wake up and take another look at the energy bill that they pass?
Well, I think, I guess we're coming back down to which politicians, love Trump or hate him. And I keep saying that, love Trump or hate him. We did create, and you can debate it, but we did create some kind of energy independence under him. And it's been happening for a while, but, I think what we've learned in this crazy world we live in is that, we got to be smart about how we manage things like energy. And, we come back again to, how smart are our politicians? It's a tough world we live in. And, my gosh, when we see suddenly that we're dependent on the country, the type of countries we talk about for oil supply, gas supply. You look at Europe becoming highly dependent on Russia for its gas. It's not good policy, and it should be bad politics. So I'm hoping that as we see turnover in the House and Senate this year, that we start to see some people who actually are smarter about, again, not smart about what is the best energy source, because we got too many of those. Trying to say what they know what the best energy source is, but it's kind of like the all of the above approach. That's what we need to have in order to be independent.
Yeah, you know, we're falling behind even Europe in our response to this too. Very green, environmentally conscious Europe. They turned course rapidly after this new energy shock came on after the war in Ukraine started. Germany's government is stockpiling coal and expediting terminals for liquefied natural gas. Europe is getting more gas through pipelines from Norway and Azerbaijan. Poland is planning new nuclear plants. The UK may restore onshore fracking and ramp up North Sea drilling. Norway plans to expand Arctic exploration. The list goes on and on. But what does Illinois do? Cling to its delusional views of what can be produced from renewables. It's very frightening, and it puts America in a dangerous energy situation, and ultimately a dangerous world position too, because we're going to be so vulnerable, you know, because we've thrown away that energy dependence that we had only 18 months ago. We're going to be so vulnerable to price shocks like this, and to potentially even worse. And if you're old enough to remember, and I do, the oil shocks in the 1970s, because Middle Eastern OPEC producers put an embargo on shipments to the United States. You should know that this is extraordinarily damaging to the economy. This produced a horrible recession and was extremely painful for the country that took us years to reverse. And to see that mistake being repeated again is really just sickening.
Hey, Mark, you know, and we have to remember who gets hit the most, because any of these energy prices are extremely regressive, as you kind of touched on. It's the low income people that are going to get hit the most, no matter what they do, right? Whether they're driving, it's a bigger share of their income. We're talking about energy costs. So you're talking about heating oil. You're talking about the gas to cook. All those things, they get whacked, and that pain is being felt. And you've got to call it inflation, because that's what it is. Inflation that comes as a result of bad policies. Well, we can add to that, if it's a good time just to maneuver to, this gas taxes in Illinois. And, everybody's being very quick to blame Putin for these gas prices and how high they are. But we have an extra double whammy, if you want to call that, in Illinois, and that our gas taxes, go up as gas prices go up, because we have a sales tax on our gas prices. And to that, Governor Pritzker doubled the motor fuel tax from 19 cents to 38 cents per gallon in 2019, when they passed their massive $45 billion capital bill. So you add insult to injury, because they doubled the tax. We have a sales tax on it. So Pritzker and others' failed policies, I think you're right, call them delusional policies, have led to higher gas prices, which with that sales tax means higher taxes. And they also, Governor Pritzker and the legislature, when they passed that motor fuel tax doubling, they also indexed it to inflation. So it goes up every year as inflation goes up. So you've got this thing where Illinois now pay, the second highest gas taxes in the country. And if you look at a place like Missouri, last week, I haven't looked this week, but last week on Friday, Missouri's gas was 73 cents on average per gallon cheaper than in Illinois. Wisconsin's was 52 cents cheaper. Kentucky's was 53 cents cheaper per gallon. Man, I mean, that is crazy stuff. Talk about a regressive tax. Talk about hitting people who are low income or struggling. And talk about another reason why if we talk about that out-migration and people leaving. Well, here's just one more reason to add on to your one's complaints about how expensive and how difficult it is to live in Illinois.
And Chicago and Chicago City Council, in its infinite wisdom, just this week passed a ban on any city investments of city money in oil and gas companies, fossil fuel companies of any kind, including energy production companies. They're following the lead of the Illinois treasurer that has done this kind of thing. Some other progressive states have done the same. I mean, how tone deaf do you have to be in the middle of this crisis for people with high gasoline costs to be putting an embargo on oil and gas exploration and drillers and the rest? This is just insane. I mean, it's truly as if, once again, The government is doing all it can within the bounds of what could reasonably get away with to destroy the country. It's just shameful. And Ted, you know, one of the things making this so expensive, the statewide bill, CEJA that was passed, it's also a huge social justice program. It essentially converts the energy production industry in Illinois into a large social justice effort. Word equity appears in CEJA 114 times. The word environmental justice, the term environmental justice, appears 86 times. And there's just all kinds of things in here. The creation of a new green bank to provide seed money to black and brown contractors, support for formerly incarcerated people to participate in the new green industries. Reporting requirements to make sure that diversity goals are met for everybody in the energy industry. $80 million will be paid by ratepayers on development programs. We're going to have 13 hubs around the state for equity-focused communities, they're called. You'll get a $4,000 back on your electric car, $9,000 back on solar panel installation paid for by state taxpayers. What does this all add up to? Billions of dollars. We don't know exactly how much because they've never produced an honest cost estimate. And we've tried, as our readers know, for several years while this has been discussed, to get any honest analysis of cost on this. The proponents have never produced a thing. Critics estimated at several billion dollars per year. That seems about right to me.
Yeah, I think what you're pointing out is this, there are a lot of signaling, equity, social justice signaling in these bills, and they're using a lot of taxpayer dollars to do it. It's not a question, again, I talk about this a lot, it's not a question of whether these things have merit, whether these things can be proven to work, as you just said. They just sound good, they look good. It's more like, for me, it's more like campaign spending. It's using federal money or using state money. Take it from the taxpayers and then turn around and use it to campaign for things and show signal how what a good person you are, but there's just clearly no good metrics or anything that says all this stuff makes sense. Of course, it sounds good and it might be well intended, but frankly, I'm a little skeptical. I'm more thinking that it's purely signaling for getting more votes. And you're talking about billions of dollars.
Looking at it in the big picture, it's just unvarnished contempt for a free market system, for capitalism. They think in their wisdom, done it with the energy sector, they'll do it with whatever they can get away with. But they think that they can set consumption and price controls and everything else in a way that will be better than the marketplace provides. They may not all call themselves socialists, but they are in practice. And this is a vast expansion of governmental power that America doesn't want. I continue to believe that the portion of the population that's with the far left that is the ruling class in Illinois and in the federal government right now is no more than 25 or 30% of the general population. But it's a tyranny by the minority because they've had the press on their side. Big tech suppresses competing ideas routinely. The schools teach their side of the equation and nothing else. And that's how they've been able to win. That's how a very small minority becomes a tyranny.
Yeah, and Mark, there's the national problem, but then when you bring it back down to the state, we're probably the extreme of what's going on, with the couple other states. And so, it's really easy to watch what happens. It's probably a good way to wrap up right here. The way that they treat things like the unemployment insurance fund and try to bully their way into making it sound good when it's not true. The way that they're doing the energy policy here, whether it's the CEJA bill or whether it's the gas taxes, people can respond to that. And when we're seeing what's happening, people leave. And it may not be one thing. It would be wrong to say it's one thing that they don't like, although you could say corruption might be the one thing. But when you add up the corruption, when you add up the finances, when you add up the kind of way that they use people's taxes to promote their social justice agenda, in an energy bill, right? People vote with their feet. And if we weren't convinced by the last decade where Illinois shrank, it was one of only three states to shrink in the nation, then, 2021 might be the bigger signal because the numbers are even bigger. So watch out is all I've got to say. Right now, they're passing a lot of bad policies. They're not fixing any of the problems. They're not making Illinois a more livable place by doing pension reform or ethics reform or property tax reductions or taking back the power of the unions. In fact, they seem to be collecting even more power, even more decision-making in Springfield and shoving it down people's throats. And it won't work because people will keep leaving. So I guess we'll just see what the numbers do, over the next few years, unless we see change beforehand.
Ted, I apologize for my cell phone ringing earlier, and I looked at it, and it's a friend in South Carolina calling. And I looked at the list of calls this week that I had with lifelong friends, most of whom that I know from Illinois. I think there's two that from people that are still in Illinois, four from Tennessee, one from South Carolina, two in Florida, three in Texas. I mean, that says it all. It's just heartbreaking, and we're not doing anything about it.
Yeah, so let me remind people, and thanks for listening to us. We're bringing out these problems not because we like to complain, but because we need to highlight what the truth is, and then, of course, we want to push for change. The question is, can we get change before too many people leave? And our goal would be, we would love to see the change come now and turn Illinois from a state that's losing people to one that's gaining people. But right now, it's not happening, and so we'll keep pushing.
Thanks for listening. We'll check in with you next time on The Dialogue by Wire Points.